This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
I was curious who would come to a topic on a subject as morbid as stopping to do what we've always done. And so, welcome. The story is told of how in Buckingham Palace there was a guard who stood by a stairway. And he would be there every morning at the appointed time. He would stand there by the stairway and he would guard that staircase until evening. So as time passed by, there was someone who asked the question, "Why are you standing there? Like, what are you guarding?" And so they asked the guard, and he said, "Well, I'm carrying on what my father did before me. He was appointed to guard this staircase, and so every day he guarded it until the end of his life, and now I carry on." So they tried to determine why was his father appointed, and what they learned was that there was a day when the staircase was painted. And so there was someone appointed to stand by the staircase to not allow people up the staircase until the paint was dry. Now, whether or not this sounds like fairly fanciful to me, and I Googled this, and I was not able to verify this information. And you know that if you can Google it and it's there, then it is true. Yeah. But I tend to think that this might be urban legend. However, it illustrates a very good point, is that sometimes things get started for a specific reason. The reason passes, but we keep on doing what we've always done because no one asks, why are we doing this? So this subject is on when to stop doing what we've always done. Now, I want to say here at the outset that I'm hoping to have discussion from all of you, because this is not a finely refined topic with all the answers. In fact, there was little source material, at least among, let's say, little Anabaptist-produced source material for this subject. And so I'm assuming that, look at it this way. You have the opportunity to be kind of in on kind of like the ground level of developing this topic and to help our works of our ministries and works of charity to think about, does there come a time when we should stop what we have always been doing? And I might add, not so you can retire and go home or quit doing anything, but perhaps redirect your energies and resources. So when to stop doing what? So I meant to say this. Interrupt me at any time. If you don't say anything, I'll just keep on going. But I'm hoping to have time left at the end for some Q&A, but why not just have the Q&A right as it occurs? And so if you have something you would like to ask or something you would like to say or like to further elaborate, or if you want to push back, then feel free to do that. Deal? So when to stop doing what we have always done. So if you're just to refresh our memories, here's what you signed up for when you said you'll attend this seminar or this session. Mission programs begin by responding to a real need. Staff, structure, and funding develop around this need and gain a momentum of their own, often. This session will ask the hard questions that help your mission analyze the effectiveness of your work, evaluate its long-term outcome, and end programs that have accomplished their purpose or outlived their usefulness. An effective internal program audit can help you know how and when to redirect resources to where they are most needed. So that last sentence already tells you this is where we're headed. But let's talk about how to get there. Is your ministry efficient in delivering the services you provide? Or is it wasting money through poorly run operations that don't accomplish much for God? Is your ministry effective? That's different from efficient. Is it effective in bringing long-term change? Or is it creating chronic dependency by doing more of what you've always done? Have your programs accomplished their purpose or outlived their usefulness, and you should redirect resources to where they are more urgently needed? These are the questions that we are asking today. These questions need answers. To ministries that are mature, these questions need answers. So here's an overview of what we'll be considering. The nonprofit life cycle, nonprofit stagnation, internal program audits, ministry cost-benefit analysis, overcoming objections, how to start a program audit, and then we'll end up with the question of, can you break through? So here's a way to think about nonprofits. Let's say most charities start by responding to a critical need. The visionary founders decide something can and must be done. They spread the word and they organize a response to whatever need it is that has been that lies on their heart. And this could be called nonprofit birth. A vision is born to respond to a need. The work is starting, but like a newborn baby, it is too early to know just what will it look like as it ages and develops into maturity. It's just been born. Like a newborn baby, a newborn prophet may cause pain as it's born. But there is great excitement upon its arrival. The focus is on the immediate need, with little thought at this time for long-term outcomes that may eventually result. And then as the newborn charity begins growing, staff and funding begin to develop around the need that it fills. Staff and funding and resources are organized to meet this need, and they develop into a program, is the word we use to define it, a structured set of related activities. Related needs may lead in some charities, some charities to develop like multiple programs. So this could be called nonprofit youth. Programs are taking shape and maturing. Like youth, they are still under development. And like youth, a nonprofit youth carries out its work with great vigor and energy. It's beginning to appear now what this charity will be, but it's not yet fully matured, and it's too early to analyze long-term outcomes. And then the next phase is a nonprofit adult. As a nonprofit youth matures, its initial inquisitiveness and sensitivity to fill the need, or to the need that it fills, this begins to kind of harden and solidify often. Programs are fully developed, and while minor adjustments continue to be made, the core programs remain static and relatively unchanging. The funding stream that was developed to carry out this ministry was established by hard work, and it becomes kind of stable and predictable. And maybe you could call this nonprofit adulthood. Programs gain sufficient momentum to carry on year after year. And there's no longer the sense of will we have enough resources for the next year? That you kind of like settle into this routine. kind of like middle-aged youth or middle-aged men. The nonprofit ages, and it gets comfortable with its condition, and is kind of okay with how it's changed. But now that it's matured, it's hard to evaluate long-term outcomes in the face of the potential program disruption that the changes would bring. Remember, back in its birth and infancy, it's hard to evaluate long-term outcomes because we don't know for sure yet, well, what is it actually going to be like? And then in its youth, things are still developing, and it's still kind of hard to evaluate what are these outcomes going to be. And then in its adulthood, again, it's kind of hard to evaluate what the long-term outcomes are, but for a different reason. Not because it's not yet developed, because it's hard for us. There's just something innately difficult about then stepping back, and I'll say with a cool, dispassionate perspective, evaluating how are we doing. This period can be, I'm not suggesting all ministries should think, okay, this is okay, so if we've been in existence more than 10 years, he's talking about us. That's not the case at all. But this is more to be like introspective, considering ourselves. But I'm curious, as you think about this birth to youth to adulthood, in your ministries, kind of how many are here that would say, ours has just been born? Or maybe the date of birth is approaching. There's also that aspect. What about you're in your youth? Things are still developing and changing and so on. What about adulthood? So let me just ask, does this resonate with you? I mean, does it make sense that we go through this process? And because of the familiarity that we learn, eventually it becomes hard for us to see ourselves. It's just like in our own lives. It's been said this way that we hold each other, like some dysfunctional action or behavior in the life of somebody else is sin, while it's a shortcoming on my part. But it's a pretty bad, pretty desperate sin on someone else's part. That's the way we kind of cut ourselves more slack, while we hold each other, hold others more accountable, because it helps justify the slack that we've cut for ourselves. And so there's this dynamic that we're trying to push through here and help us think about how do we then look at, how do we evaluate ourselves. So there's this time of this nonprofit stagnation can develop. Nonprofit adults may stagnate in comfort and familiarity. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, there would be then the idea that I judge others by what I see them do, but I judge myself by what I intended to do.
The comment is that we judge others by what they do, and we judge ourselves by what we intended to do. And since we don't know what their intentions were, we hold them to a higher standard than we do ourselves, who just didn't quite get done what we intended to do. Good thought. I think that's true of our personal lives. It's also true of our organizational lives. So we may stagnate in comfort and familiarity. Often, I guess I want to say this, often too little generative thinking is done. Too little evaluation of outcomes is done. Too much of what we've always done is done. Too often causes an imperceptible diminished effectiveness. And it's too often the founders who are still involved in the governance that are satisfied to maintain the status quo. We'll get back to that subject later then. Thank you for the question. Too little generative thinking. No, the idea is too little thinking that is generating new ideas. When a nonprofit is being birthed, you know, there's a need, and so there's like innovative thinking about how can we meet this need, and so there's this generative, like I said, generating new ideas. That generative aspect is strong. But as we settle into our way of doing things, kind of imperceptible to us, we do less and less generative thinking. Let me just say it back for the recording. So is it possible that as we age, we get tired? We get tired of pushing against the way we've always done things. We just kind of like settle into, well, it's okay the way we've always done it. This dynamic is that founders who have seen their work come into fruition tire as they age. Maybe we should have another phase of nonprofit old age. What a blessing it is when those who age support those who are carrying on the vision. So I have a slide here on overcoming nonprofit stagnation. And let me just put it this way. There are some ideas. There are many more things for us to consider. But the question is, how can nonprofits avoid and overcome stagnation and diminished effectiveness? And I want to make sure we consider this element to stagnation. It's not just that we become stagnant and move slower, but there's also often diminished effectiveness. So there's developing an opportunity cost or an opportunity loss that should be taken into account as well. So here are some ideas. Through board governance, establish term limits to turn over the board over time. Now, some boards do this, some boards don't, and this is not a criticism. It's just saying that I would propose to you that old board members get like old couches, that an old couch kind of gets shaped and molded into a certain, form, and it gets tired. And when you get up out of the couch, it doesn't spring back to its original shape. It kind of keeps its shape there. Just the way you eventually need a new couch, you eventually need new board members. And you can facilitate that through board governance, by having term limits, but stagger the terms so that you have a mix of new and experienced board members, and create an atmosphere that encourages generative thought. And here the assumption is, and I think it bears itself out, that those of us who were founders in our generation, who become familiar as the work matures, are often, there's a sense of satisfaction with having accomplished what we set out to do, and our generative thinking is on the decline. And it's the new younger board members or staff who come on that weren't there to be part of the beginning, that begin to think of new beginnings or doing things differently. Here's another thought is through a regular SWOT analysis. Are you familiar with the SWOT analysis? It's strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So I don't see a board here to write on, but imagine just a blank piece of paper. You create four quarters and then list the strengths of your organization, and then list the weaknesses. If you can only think of strength and you can't think of weaknesses, you probably are looking at only one side, not both sides. Because for every strength, there's an offsetting weakness. And so list the strength, list the weaknesses, and then list the opportunities. What are the things that are opportunities to this organization, and what are the threats to this organization? And list them out. And by doing this periodically, it brings into consciousness and into focus what are we good at, what are we not doing so well at, and what are we actually not getting done, opportunities that are developing and they're not being done, and what are the threats to what we are actually doing. It helps to kind of to clear this, put this into mind. I did not in your handout include a SWOT analysis. You can actually Google that, and it's, you know, you can find it, and it's nothing complicated. But if you want like some thought starters, Google it, and you'll be able to find SWOT analysis and how to get started and so on. But I just encourage an organization to do it regularly. Do it, you know, from, and maybe not even annually, but do it periodically. And then measure from one time to the next if things are changing. And then thirdly, through self-administered internal program audits. So, what is a program audit? A program audit is an evaluation of the various aspects of your programs to help answer questions such as, has the need changed from when your ministry began? Has the situation improved that you set out to change? You know, ostensibly, you set out to change something, and so has that situation improved to where your efforts could be or should be directed elsewhere? Have more efficient methods of addressing the need emerged since your ministry began? And think about the way in which technology is changing all the time, ever faster, and the ways in which we... Is anyone still using it? Okay. So there are newer and better ways to do things. Are you changing? To stay with the times, but to utilize the resources that God is providing for the maximum potential benefit. Is there a measurable cost benefit for the work that you do? And we'll come back to this one then. I think this is one that requires some more thought, and I want to get some feedback from you. Is your cost benefit improving or is it declining once you establish it? Is it getting better or is it getting worse? Is another mission performing this same thing more efficiently and more effectively than we? Is there a time at which we should allow them to perform the service? We're not competing, are we, in God's kingdom? We're aiding each other. So these are some of the hard questions that a program audit asks. A program audit is an evaluation of the long-term outcomes. Here's a key phrase that I've tried to use several times now, and you'll hear me continue to use it, so that we kind of capture this long-term outcomes. Because when you're close to the action, we tend to only see what's going on right here in front of us. And missions often, you have an annual budget, and this is good, and so you have your annual plan, and you work your annual plan. But sometimes, because things work cycle through this year after year after year, we don't look enough. Lift our eyes, and we look into the future, or we turn around and we look back over a period of years and we evaluate, is the outcome in alignment with what we set out to do? Is the outcome in alignment with our values? Is the outcome in alignment with what our supporters gave funds for? are the long-term outcomes what we set out to achieve? Are we employing crisis methods to address chronic needs and inadvertently creating ongoing dependency? Or here's another question. Is our work having the desired spiritual impact? Sometimes when we're involved in humanitarian aid or in other kinds of aid, we tend to not evaluate, make that a part of the evaluation. Is our work culturally acceptable? I have never had, I've heard this story, and don't know of an exact case, or I would have cited this case, but I'm assuming that it could be found. I think I've read it in one of Gary Miller's books, and so I'm assuming I could go ask Gary, and he would say, yeah, this is where it happened. But it's that story about the short-term mission group who came to build a church house, and they build it in the way that that church houses are built. And after they left, and everyone smiled and said, thank you very much. And then they went home, and then they dismantled the building and rebuilt it the way structures are constructed in that culture. And so, I'm assuming that this actually did happen. Okay. So, but it's just to illustrate this. We sometimes do things that over time, we do it the way we've always done it, and because we're successful at pulling that off, we evaluate ourselves as successful with not enough thought for is it culturally long-term successful? Is it acceptable? Is our work creating sustainability? If we need to continue what we are doing into the foreseeable future, I'm sorry, let me restate this. Do we need to continue what we are doing into the foreseeable future, or are we satisfied now with the outcome? We have about 15 minutes left, and I want some feedback from you on this subject. So let me go to this slide here, measuring cost benefit. So Peter Drucker, the management guru, said, what gets measured gets managed. Another management guru named Deming said something that you're probably thinking already. Not everything can be measured, but everything still must be managed. So the truth, however, is what gets measured must be managed. So can you in your ministry establish measures to track what it costs to do the activities you perform and the services you deliver? And let me give you, for example, I should have Googled this again to make sure, but it has been, I've read this, that it costs the U.S. government $4 to deliver $1 worth of service to the end user. That's actually not very efficient. It's actually not very effective either. But it's commendable that they know what the number is. How many of us know what our number is? So my question is, what are some measures in your ministry? And I'll pause here because there are different ministries represented here. So, I'll say, for example, I'm trying to see if I see any Calvary Bible School current board members. I don't think I see any, but maybe some of us old-timers are here. I remember when we started measuring at CBS the cost per meal, the cost per student meal. Now, the cost per student meal is not going to make or break the Bible school budget. You might say it's relatively minor in comparison to some other expenses. But what it did is it brought this consciousness that we are investing dollars into an educational program to train our youth to do what? And so when you start, and my thought is this, that just the act of measuring the cost per student meal helps us also kind of like orient ourselves to saying, is the long-term outcome of what we are teaching here serving the best interests of our churches? What are the subjects that should be taught to build our churches? And so on. So it's just a way of measuring. So in your, what are some of the measures that you could use in your organizations? Don't have to be the most meaningful one, just a measure. Yes. Cost per child per month. Cost per child per month, cost per magazine shipped. Any other ideas here? How much it costs for the newsletter and how much it brings in? Cost per counseling session. The point is that there are measures that can be established. And if you establish this way of this measurement, and then you may track that over time, you begin to see how efficient and effective you can begin to gain a sense for how efficient and effective you are. Now, let me just pause right here and say that, or acknowledge that we say, but this is not a business. This is a ministry. And that's true. And there's actually a very real threat for an adult ministry to get so caught up in the way in which we do things that we lose the heart. And that's a very real threat. So I'm not downplaying or poo-pooing that at all. That's true. But at the same time, we should also take a cold look at it, at how effective and how efficient are we. Yeah, I don't think those two are exclusive. You can have both. Okay, so let's talk. We have 10 minutes now. Let's talk about overcoming some objections. We don't want to disrupt the current flow of funds for established programs with donor support. I hear this sometimes. So if God raised up your current donors, He will raise up new donors. And here's the line of thought off. Well, if we quit doing what we're doing now, we have these donors, we have this revenue stream, we have this support that's coming in. Obviously, that means the donors want us to do this, and so we keep on doing what we've done, and we're almost hesitant to make changes or to redirect because it'll disrupt that funding stream. God raised up those donors in the first place. And if your work is worthy, He will continue to raise up donors to support the work that you're doing. And our donor base, the people in our congregations, those who support the ministries that we're engaged in, they are spiritual people. They're sensitive to God's Spirit. And we should trust God for this whole question. And I didn't see Brother John Stoltz was, have you already talked about donor fatigue? Next session. So I'm assuming you'll address how this can go with donors from a personal perspective, okay? But there is a risk here. And in a SWOT analysis, when you think about opportunities and you think about threat, there is such a thing as donor fatigue that can, for a mature nonprofit, could go into the threat section. Tiredness. Of supporting the same program on and on. And I thought we were going to make a change. Isn't that what this was all started out as? And evidently there's no change, so we just keep on doing it, and we're getting tired of hearing the same thing again and again and again. We don't have the funds for program audits. Our piggy bank is too skinny. Well, an adult nonprofit has had sufficient time to think about this and to reserve funds for a proper program audit. how about this? It may disclose poorly run areas of our ministry. I would answer this one by saying acknowledgement will increase confidence of the knowledgeable donors, not deter them. Some other objections. There can be such a thing as staff resistance. Does this mean I'm not doing a good job? You want to evaluate how we're doing? Does this mean I'm not doing a good job? There's also oftentimes in a ministry that's in a foreign community, ending on long-standing ongoing programs can have relationship challenges. Change is hard because it pushes us out of our comfort zone. So I think this phrase, ending well, is a key phrase. Ending well must be planned carefully with those who feel threatened. So, a program audit. How do you actually start a program audit? Well, one of the things you need to do is build acceptance, staff acceptance, and buy-in, and then select those who will perform the audit. Now, what is a program audit? If you go to your handout on the next to the back page is this quest is the is a sample program audit. So this is really not that hard to do. And I'm going to flip through this slide real fast and then go to this is a picture of what you have in front of you there. It's basically like we want to do a program audit. Write up a short statement as to what you're trying to accomplish. We want to evaluate our Bible study that we're holding in Timbuktu, okay? We want to evaluate the effectiveness of that Bible study. And then describe the program briefly, and then the evaluation overview. Here's what we are, like state the goals, what you're hoping to accomplish through this. And then the methodology. What data is going to be used and why do you choose it? Who's collecting the data? How are you collecting it? Through an office visit? Through an on-site field visit? Who's the staff that will be involved? How will staff understanding and buy-in be established? And then four is evaluation results. What decisions may be made based on the program audit? Are we trying to improve this program or are we thinking of ending this program? And then how will everything be communicated to the stakeholders? But it is, and I say it's a DIY program. It's not like I can produce a standard template that is going to fit the needs of all nonprofit organizations. You will have to do it yourself, but it's not that hard. You just follow an outline like this. It's not that a grader will come by and say you did this right or you did this wrong. This is for your own internal purposes. And then the actual audit itself, establish the performance measure. Rate on a scale of 1 to 10. Let's say 1 is poor, that should say 10 is excellent. How efficient, how effective, is it making a measurable difference? Is it in alignment with our ministry goals? Does this program make a spiritual impact? Is it in alignment with our long-term goals and so on like that? This can be done. What's the hardest part of a program audit? It's breaking through our own satisfaction with the status quo. The biggest question is not, how do I design the program audit? The biggest question is not, what are we going to do with the results? The biggest question is, can we break through to evaluate ourselves and bring ourselves to say that there may be times when we have accomplished what we set out to do or the needs have shifted and we need to change our program? Okay, thank you for your attention. We appreciate you coming here. I trust that this will enable us to begin evaluating ourselves with a more realistic view.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.